we're surrounded by stories that just don't add up. Choices that appear to be baffling, actions that defy logic. But what if there's more to the story? On How Did It Make Sense, we explore the power of learning from experience and digging into the second stories that are always present. We talk to experts from diverse fields who are challenging the way we think about safety, risk, and decision making. Join us as we unlock the lessons hidden within everyday events. Some of these are high risk and some appear to be mundane, but all of them show how we can create a fairer, safer, and more resilient world. Welcome to another episode of How Did It Make Sense? And actually, we're going to get James to introduce himself in a minute, but it's early at his end, and you may have just seen the coffee cup disappear out of shot. So that's the thing about global connections and networks we've got. So for those who haven't been on the podcast before, hopefully you have been, but we'll see. The idea is that we tell stories. We learn from those stories. And the challenge is that society often focuses on what we would describe as a first story of an event, which is a simple linear process. It's cause and effect. We miss the details. And that means that we end up jumping to blame. We jump to conclusions. We fall foul of the numerous biases that we're subject to that leads us to go, you know what? It was obvious why that event occurred. But actually, what we need to be doing is digging into those deeper second stories. And that's what the goal of this podcast is. So I've already mentioned him, James, colleague, been connected for a number of years now. James, mm-hmm. Who are you? What do you do? How did you get to where you are? And where can people find you physically and on social media or online?
All right. So all of that, let's see. I think we'll work backwards. We'll start with where I am right now. Yeah. So I'm at Berkeley Lab. I'm the Human Organizational Performance Manager there. I have this December will be 3 years there. Wow, so cool. Been doing that for a little bit now. And I'm the first human performance person solely. You know, my role to work at the lab. So that in itself has been full of challenges, and it's really cool. This past year, I became the safety culture working group chair, and that's been a really great opportunity to meet more people in the lab. And one of the things that I know in my heart that human organizational performance is for everybody, but I'm going to tell you that there's a job out there that it's new for, and that is for researchers and scientists. I mean, quite often when they hear of error, they're like, yeah, we have to make error to move forward. I'm like, that's not really the error that, or the failure or something that we're really talking about here. It's different. So when we're talking about error prevention versus scientific error,
serendipity, which is where they call that in sort of scientific error, novel errors.
That's right. So going through the nuances in that and learning this new role, it's been great because I get to learn some of the really cool cutting edge research that we're doing. And it's fantastic. We have a really great facility with about 4,000 people and user facility too. So we have people from all over the world that are coming, and sometimes they're there for a short time. Sometimes they're there for a long time. And then we have our own in-house, facility group. We have our construction group, and it's just really been a fantastic experience for me so far. I'm doing my best to add value everywhere I can. So that's my current, what I've
Excellent.
Been doing.
And how did you get to where you are then? So, what was really interesting there, you said, having a hop person in a lab, and I would have thought that, that would have been a norm, but obviously not. So tell us where you got how you got to where you are now.
All right. So back in 1992, I finished college for nuclear engineering, and I was actually on a scholarship that was paid for by a nuclear fleet owner. At the time, they were called Northeast Utilities. They've changed over the years. But anyway, I ended up working at a plant called Millstone as an instrument and control specialist for about 15 years. And in 2007, they offered a position for a human performance site person, and I've been the human performance chair of various human performance committees and been pushing human performance ever since. In 96, Tony Mascera had come to our plant and gave a 4-hour intro to human performance fundamentals thing. Yeah. And I was in the back of the room. I was like the only non-management person that found their way into this. And I just was like, I think this is what I want to do.
Yeah.
And then we had some bad news in 97, early 97 timeframe that, you know, the plant that I was supporting wasn't going to be running anymore. Mm-hmm. So there was a gap in time. It ended up being about 9 months before I was rotated to one of the other plants at that site and as a tech. Mm-hmm. So in that timeframe, they let me go out to the corrective action group. And that's when I really got to get into human performance and causal analysis and just really loved it. And then they grabbed me and put me back into the field.
Cool.
So the story that I'm going to be sharing with you today is happening right around that time, you know, 1999-ish, somewhere in there.
Okay, cool.
It was quite a while ago, but it's a story that's still top of mind. I definitely will get into that. But in 2007, I started... the same week, the first week that my oldest son was born was the first week I started working as a human performance person. So to the week, however old my oldest son is how many years I've been in human performance. So he just turned 17 on Halloween.
Yep.
So that's October 31st in the States. I don't know what gets celebrated
it's
around
the same as everywhere else.
Okay. Hey, just being a little.
Well, that's it, because Mother's Day and Father's Day and other days are different. So yeah, there we go.
Some things sync up and some things don't, right? So 17 years of doing this, it's been great. Back in, I was headhunted at one point to a nuclear plant out in Kansas. I worked out there for 4 years. As a human performance lead. And then I was headhunted to a high power transmission company where they didn't have a human performance initiative program. You know, as long as you don't think that's a dirty word, a program.
That's fine. Yes. You've got to have some framework towards it. Yes. It's a
framework.
Yeah.
Framework. Less dirty word than program. So, you know, they have documentation and they have a path forward with human organizational performance. So, and then I decided, you know, then I was kind of pulled out of that world and asked to help a group consult. And shortly after that, I started my own consulting business. And that's where the lab found me. And
cool.
I think my first work with them was in 2018. They had me come in and do some work observation training with them. And the person that set that up had me come back again in the middle of the pandemic for some other training that they had asked for. And then I got a call and says, hey, we're going to be opening a job. Make sure you look and apply for it. So that's a... if you don't mind coming to California. So anyway, being an East Coaster, my most of my life, except for that stint in Michigan and Kansas, I was like, yeah, we'll give California a try. And we love the weather. People are really nice. I mean, people are nice everywhere you go. That's one thing I learned. I really, you know, you're going to find nice people everywhere you go.
Yeah, so no, absolutely. That's really cool. Really good. Your bit about the experiment piece reminds me of Amy Edmondson's book of The Right Kind of Wrong. And she talks about, you know, that experimental piece where you are looking for sort of serendipity and those bits of go, oh, that's interesting. So there's definitely a place where you're pushing boundaries, you're innovating. But there's also this bit that says, actually, we're trying to structure things as best we can. We want to put the level of control in place. And we know there's going to be variance, but how do we reduce the likelihood of that variance that's happening in terms of as human performance? So tell us the first story about this event then, James.
All right. Getting us back into the time frame of, so I was an instrument control specialist, okay? Which means in a nuclear power plant, all of the instrumentation, basically that's what we're responsible for, whether it's installing new stuff, calibrating, doing monthly or weekly or quarterly or semi-annual surveillances to make sure that things are working the way they're supposed to. New installations, all of anything that's instrumentation was. And instrumentation is basically measuring every single parameter possible from how bright the sun is. That was one of our pieces of instrumentation, which I love that one, to all of the nuclear instrumentation, which takes care of certain pressures, levels, temperatures, how much radiation is coming off of something, different types of radiation. So measuring anything you can possibly imagine in a nuclear power plant is, you know, so part of that is measuring where the control rods are. And
Okay,
that
yeah.
brings us
That's quite an
this
important
job.
thing, I would think, for a nuclear
It
power station.
is. It is. And another important little thing before we get into the, you know, I'm going to add a little bit more
Yeah.
context. And every 18 months, this kind of power plant, it's a pressurized water reactor. This story is about one. It's called a combustion engineering style built in the 70s, 1970s, and been running ever since. It's running really great right now today as we speak. So
Wow.
it's been running quite a long
You didn't
time.
break it that badly then.
No.
Weren't Homer Simpson playing around with these things as you go along, so.
Right. Well, I'm not gonna say I wasn't. Yeah. There was a few, you know, there's a word that gets everybody's attention in the control room, and that word would be oops, right? You know, if somebody
Yeah, oh
says
yes.
oops, you're like, what just happened? If you're saying oops, you know, that's one of
Yeah.
those.
Oh,
All
totally.
right.
Same thing on a flight deck of an aircraft. Oops. Or did you say that?
That's gonna. Yeah, that's gonna. There's certain phrases that people will say that really get your attention in certain aspects. So for this story, you have to imagine that in order for us to control power, whether we run the plant or shut it down, we have control rods, and you know, they're when we pull them out, that brings power up. When we put them down, that shuts the plant down. That's how this plant works anyway. A lot of them, all the nuclear plants work like that. Okay, so part of the way that instrumentation gets controlled, so the people in the control room can move control rods and get the displays and all that stuff, it goes to these cables on top of the reactor head. And so these cables, in order to get all of the stuff off of the reactor when we're doing all the work, when we're shut down, these every 18 months when we refuel, we replace one third of the core with new fuel every 18 months. So in order to do that, you got to get all this stuff out of the way so operations can get their team in to refuel the plant. So this is at the end of the refueling outage. We're putting everything back together, and part of that involves reconnecting cables. All right. So,
Making sure you don't have anything left over at the end. Hey, I've got three more screws. Did these go anywhere?
this is not the time for the IKEA moment with what are these things for? You know, I'm all done with the job and I have extra parts. Right. Definitely not. And everything you're doing in the nuclear world is driven by a work order. It's driven by procedure, most of it, you know, and certainly familiarity. I mean, rarely does somebody get forced to work in knowledge-based mode. And if you know anything about knowledge-based mode, or people listening or watching, that is going to play into this little story. Okay, so you have the kind of a background. So I was on a job when we were, I was actually running the job, and we're reconnecting these connectors. And these connectors are made by a company called Litton Veen. So they're these Litton Veen connectors. They're about the size of a medium-sized banana. So they're pretty big. And they go on this panel. And you connect it up. You got to make sure that this one labeled this way, I mean, this is very, very elementary, goes to the one that has the
The
same label on the
corresponding number
panel.
on it, yeah. So you don't
Corresponding number, you get somebody to verify it, connect it, and then you sign it off on a list, right? That's basically
What could possibly
the
go
job.
wrong? I mean, it's plug it in,
What could
sign it off.
possibly go wrong with this? Except part of the job was right in the work order, there was a bag of red O-rings, all right? And So I'm going to say it like this. The thought process is you have old O-rings. These are all new O-rings. Plus, we had this stuff. I think it was a Molly coat or something called 55M, or you're supposed to put the O-ring grease on it. So you put the O-ring grease on the new one. I think each of these connectors had two O-rings. Take the old ones off with a little O-ring hook. Take that off and then put the new ones on and then connect it up. All right, that's basically the job. Now, mind you, there were three people, physical workers, and I was running the crew. All right, the three workers also, they were not instrumentation people. They were a refueling group that we had brought in to help us. All right, so these aren't other instrument control techs. And these are people that I had never met before. All right, until this day. And but the job, pretty elementary. Connect this
But it
one
sounds
alpha to
like
one
something went wrong. What was the outcome then?
alpha.
What's so we
All
jump, you know, we jump into before we go way into those details. What happened?
right. Yeah. So about 8 hours into a 10 and a half hour job. There's a lot of these connectors, by the way. And you're in yellows, you're wearing protective clothing. No respirators, thankfully, because that would slows down everything, right? But we're so we have rubber gloves on top of cotton gloves. I mean, everything is hot. You're sweating. It's super hot, and paying attention to everything. And sometimes your safety glasses fog up. There's all this other stuff going on that, is inconsequential to what happened. But the idea was, we were getting ready to do the fourth out of four of these panels. Four out of four. And one of the guys says, "Hey, James, we only have a couple of O-rings left." And we had a whole panel to do. And I was like, "Oh, no problem. I'll call the boss. And by the time we're out of O-rings, we'll have new O-rings out here." So I go to the phone and I call the boss and I say, "Hey, we need more of these Litenveam O-rings out here for this job." And he says, "What are you talking about? You had the right amount for this job." And I said, "Well, we're on the fourth connection assembly, and I was just told we only have like enough for maybe somewhere between six or eight connectors." And he's like, "No, I promise you have enough." And then he says this, "You're not supposed to replace every one of them." So there you go.
Okay,
All right.
so you burnt through these O-rings at a pace that you really shouldn't have done.
Right.
And obviously, you know, when you phone the boss and he goes, "You're not supposed to use them," ding, light bulb. So how did you burn through all of these O-rings then, James, that you shouldn't have done in that situation?
Your heart sinks, and the first thing you think of, there's something in a refueling outage, or any time a system comes down, and it's called critical path, right? And critical path is those things that are slowing you down from starting back up, right?
The bottlenecks
And
that are there, yeah.
that's right. That's right. Like, well, if you only have one thing left to do, that's your critical path thing. And then when that's done, you can start starting up, right? This job had the potential of being that critical path job, and that's the last thing you want to be responsible for in a refueling outage if you can avoid it. And
You're
yeah, so
holding us back.
that is raising the stakes of simple little O-rings, right? So what's the big deal? I'm like, can we just get more O-rings out here? And that could be the fix, because I'll tell you this. The guys who are doing this have done this many times before, and they're like, "These O-rings needed to be replaced." So I'm like, "What's the problem?" "It's just some O-rings." The problem is they're QA, quality assured. So getting QA anything is a pain in the neck, because that means they can trace the whatever the rubber or whatever's inside of the O-rings all the way back
It's just like
to
aviation type QA stuff for, yeah, it's why a screw in aviation costs you a lot more than
That's
a screw
exactly
down
right.
B&Q or the hardware shop.
It's not that it's any different than that screw in the hardware shop, but it has a paperwork that goes all the way back to the mine, perhaps, that came out of. And there's a paperwork trail on that. So these O-rings have that paperwork trail, and they're very difficult to get. So anyway, we don't have any more is the answer I got. So they had to come up we had to come up with a plan then. So I got the three guys that were working with me, and I said, And we had saved all of the O-rings that we had taken out. And we, at that point in time, separated them into two piles. Ones that still looked pretty good that we would consider reusing. And then the ones that, I mean, were just, they were either broken or brittle or whatever, right? Not going to last.
You stuck a pick through so they weren't useful. So.
Right. Yeah. Because you're not thinking you're going to ever have to see these things again. And they could have been brutes about it, but thankfully they weren't. So we did still have usable ones. But really, my main question was, which ones were we supposed to not replace, and which ones were we supposed to look at replacing? And so at that point in time, my supervisor says, there's a list in the back of the work order that says these are the ones that you need to change.
So they're not in the sequence of the work order as it's written, which would be where the useful place for that would be.
Yeah. Plus, this job is so simple and easy. Just connect them up.
Yeah.
So okay, this is how that night started. We're going to start into second story. Is that, all right?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Go for it. I mean, we've had a little bit of story, second story. Go for it.
Right.
So what's the context, and how did you end up being so just incompetent there, James, that you burnt through those O-rings in the way you did? I mean,
I know.
You're a professional and in this space.
I had been doing it for a while. And obviously, they trusted me enough to run a crew. I'm going to say this is a pretty simple job. So here's what my night looked like. By the way, this job was done in, I had mentioned, you know, dressed up in yellows and stuff. So we're in containment, which is where all of that, the important stuff is in a nuclear power plant. My job for the refueling outage, had mainly been, turbine instrumentation, which is a whole nother building, literally the turbine building, and all of the instrumentation on the turbine, which, you know, that's what you want to spin to make your electricity, right? Is the turbine. So I had finished all of my stuff and my projects, not just me, but the whole turbine team finished. Thankfully, we were either on time or a little early.
Mm-hmm.
But now.
So it wasn't your fault then? Not at that stage, right. Anyway.
I had worked myself out of work, which is exactly what you want to do in an outage. So now you can support other teams and help them with their work. So that's, this job ended up being something like that. So I get to work that night and my boss comes over to me and he says, I need you to get in containment right now. Got a crew of three guys waiting for you to connect up the hacks.
Okay.
Well, that's exactly what he said to me. So I really have one question, and I don't mean to sound sarcastic. I've been here a little while now. What's a hack? Right? So as you probably have guessed, we talk in acronyms quite a lot. It's like head assembly, cable connector. It's HACCS system or something like that. Which we've kind of replaced this with a whole new head assembly these days. So we've actually upgraded the plant. So all the stuff I'm telling you about now, this instrumentation doesn't even exist. It's all different now. And they do it a lot more efficient than what we were doing it. Thankfully. So it wasn't because of this job, by the way.
Given this new task that you have to ask what it's about, so... It sounds like you're being really set up for success straight away here.
Right. And believe me, you know, as a worker, when you're heading down that road, right? So the next thing I say, okay, you know, where's the work order? You know, I'll get dressed because we got to get into, we call them, you know, scrubs, basically, because you wear scrubs underneath your protective clothing. So I went to go get my scrubs on because you wear that over because you don't walk around the whole site with protective clothing on. You just do that at the entrance to the contaminated areas. So before I went to get my scrubs on, I said, you know, where's the work order for this? And my supervisor says, everything you need is at the entrance to containment, including the three guys who are waiting for you. And I'm like, what is a hack? And he basically says those are the cables on top of the head that you need to reattach at the end of the outage. The guys know what they're doing. You just need to lead them.
Yeah.
I'm like, Now it's
but
base
yeah,
mode.
that's it. Yeah, absolutely. I was going to
Focus in
say, oh,
ahead.
and by the way, as the supervisor, you're culpable if it goes wrong as well.
Oh
So.
yeah. So I'm like, what radiation work permit number are we on? Because is there a unique one for this job? Which there was. So there, then that requires a briefing with our radiation protection group. So anyway, so I finally get through that briefing. I get on the right radiation work permit. We call them RWPs. I get on the right number. I get to the entrance of containment. I get the work order, and in the work order is a list of all of the hack stuff, right? All of the cables that need to be there, and also a bag of O-rings. And next to it is this it's almost like a toothpaste thing
Oh,
the lubricant.
lubricant for the O-rings. So how
That's
many
right.
O-rings are in that bag then? You talk about, four of four, and so
If you can look at a gumball machine and be able to tell me how many gumballs are in there, that's basically what we're dealing with. Because I thought, looking at it, I don't know, is there
So it's 10s,
200?
15s, 20. Oh, right. Oh, it's a couple hundred then.
Oh, is that? Yeah, I'm
Wow.
like,
Okay.
is there 200 in here? 300? You know,
Wow.
all I
Okay.
know is
There's
it's a
lots.
large Ziploc bag and it's just stock full with these red O-rings, which also made me think that there's a whole bunch more sitting in the warehouse somewhere. It's just it
Yeah,
visually, in my
presentationally,
expectations,
yeah,
were
bias. There we go. Yeah.
But the parts are right there. By the way, am I to question, are these the right O-rings? You know what I mean? Obviously, they're in the work order for this job, right? Oh,
So
man. All
somebody
right.
has done their job properly, and I'm making the assumption, and it's one of the things I talk about with the Swiss cheese model is, where we are in time and space, we make the assumption that the person to me, left of me in time, has done their job properly, and if, they've made a mistake, I'll pick it up. And if the person to the right of me, I'm going to do my job properly, but they will pick up my mistakes. So there is this assumption that people do a good job. And, we're in a professional space and people are doing that. They're not going to make mistakes. But actually, we've got these peer checking processes to try and help with that. So I'm guessing there's a peer checking process that says, count the number of O-rings to go into the bag for the work order. And we go through and go, da-da-da. So it would be a fair assumption that the bag either has exactly the right number or a couple of
Or
spare
too
pieces.
many, too many, right? And my head space was there's plenty to do this job and more, right? We're gonna have extras when we're done. That's my guesstimation. Also, the three guys who have done this job before, it was also their guesstimation. So that looks like we have plenty to do the job. That was the answer to that question. We're not gonna go in there and count them all. It didn't make sense to do that. We have to rely on procurement, and the people that set you up generally are setting you up for success.
Assume
And
good
there's a
intent.
yeah, and there's a work order driving this. By the way, like, just talk about time constraints here. My boss was all about getting me in containment. Like these guys are waiting for you. That's the last thing you want to hear when you're just showing up on shift, is that you got people waiting for you.
Especially as a new guy as well. Oh God, here we go.
Not working in containment at all this outage, and now my first job in there, I'm running a team of people doing something I've never even done before. I don't even know the acronyms, right? So this work order, and I mean this, we had a lot of most of our work orders for refuel outages are in 3-ring binders, and this one is like one of those 3 or 4 inch. I mean, it's just full of documents, right? And in that. In there somewhere is a procedure, and in the back of that procedure is a list of the ones that need to have their O-ring replaced and have a specific thing signed off to say this O-ring was replaced for this one. So, out of those connectors, not all of those connectors are moving rods. Some of them have less important things, and those are the ones that didn't need to be changed. So that was, there's a difference between the ones that do need to be changed because they're more important to me and the guys doing the job.
They're all
If
important.
there's any brittle, they're all important, right? Yeah, we want these things to last as long as possible. And we have a whole bag right here. Let's take the old ones off and put the new ones on. My pre-job brief was get in the containment. This is what a hack is. Guys are waiting for you. I mean, you go into the job knowing that you're set up a bit, but you think it's going to work out because it normally does, right? And it would have worked out if he could have just went to procurement and said, "Hey, we need another 50 red O-rings for Lit and Veeam connectors. Can you get them in QA?
Yeah.
Just sign them out to this work order, and we're good to go." The problem is we didn't have any in our
Oops.
warehouse.
And so, looking at that local rationality, how does it make sense? It's quite easy to blame up the system as well. And they're doing some work recently that, this team are going, headquarters, they don't understand what happened. And I said, look, stop the blaming up because you don't understand their context. So in this situation here, I can imagine that, that refueling ac activity, if it happens every 18 months, there is a whole bunch of scheduling that says, put these parts in place, procure them. This is what they cost. This is what we have to put them in place. They have to be QA'd at a certain amount of time. And we basically put them into the huge project plan and we deliver them as and when they're needed. And as with many organizations, just in time procurement is exactly what, because we don't want stock sitting on the shelf that we don't need. So actually, we might get 5% more just in case. But if we've got a QA system, why would we need to get even 5% more for spares? Because they've all been QA'd. And so I can see at a system level why you wouldn't have those unless you've got another system that needs those same O-rings. But then if you're going to rob Peter to pay Paul, then actually you're going to be in a similar situation somewhere else. So what other sort of higher level factors are there? So, you've been set up, you've managed it. So there's two questions we've got, one of the higher level bits, but also how did you succeed? Because I'm guessing you managed to get it back on time.
So
Ish.
fortunately, the ish, right? Fortunately, some decisions and the right decision makers were on. Wow, I forgot to say this was night shift. I didn't
Yeah,
say
no, you
that.
did say come in the evening. So yeah, night shift.
Because that does add something to all of this, right? It means that there are slightly less resources, like less warehouse people, for
Yeah, it's
example,
less back end stuff. There might not be the
on
sharp end, but there's less,
the
support facility.
Right. So that slows things down a little bit on the night shift when trying to get answers. And by the way, I wouldn't really talk about personalities too much with this, but the personality of that supervisor, I mean, he was literally yelling at me for doing this. And I really think he was yelling at himself for not at least n letting me know some of the nuances of the job in the pre-job brief. Which, like I said, this is one of the worst pre-job briefs I've ever gotten in my whole career. So I'm like not
There's a lot,
shocked.
yeah, projection is not infrequent in that sense of I'm going to get angry at you because actually I'm angry at myself for setting this up as a failure.
It was so bad that other techs complained about it, and he had to apologize to me. It was at the level of unprofessional, and I'm sitting here in the middle of the night. Literally, I'm going to say that I was like by myself. It wasn't like anybody was helping me. I was keeping track of these three guys, making sure all the signatures were happening when we were reconnecting these things. We kept all of the O-rings that we took off. So we basically, while I was talking to my boss, I was having them go through and find the ones that could go back on.
So they
You
got
know, so
properly
we're trying to.
QA'd then. So
Yeah, well, I mean, oh my gosh, it was just and these guys are like, we don't want to put any of these back on. I'm like, I don't want to either, but that doesn't matter what we want. What matters is how we can move forward. So we end up, our procurement people were so amazing. They ended up finding more O-rings that were put aside for another unit's job. And they are already QA'd, they were already sitting on a
Oh,
shelf
cool.
for our next door neighbor unit, and it was about it was like 75 O-rings. It was literally, it just took one of our people who knew about it because it wasn't in the system. It was already
Yeah. Oh,
being
right.
blocked for
Oh,
a very
cool.
specific job. So he knew where to look physically because they were so familiar with the things that are in the warehouse. So like I said, they don't make people have to be this good, but this guy, like I said, we had some really, really amazing
You've been
people who
saving the day. Who would have
that's
thought
right.
that?
I know, and plus you're like also thinking, this is a job that takes quite some understanding to explain to somebody how it's more simple than just put A1 to A1 and connect it. It seems royally easy to do that, but making sure you're doing it when it's proper and then it's verified the proper way and these O-rings are installed the proper way and that it won't fail. These are super important to maintaining the nuclear safety. We're supposed to ask ourselves in every single job that we do, how does this affect reactor safety, or how can this? In this job, it's clear how it affects, because if you can't control rods, it's that important, right? So my
So it's
level of
interesting then as
would
well is at that
high.
stage, there isn't the risk of any sort of nuclear side, but there are commercial imperatives and time imperatives. So yes, we can't do this. Right. Now what's the implication? So yes, you found that I interrupt you, sorry.
No, it's all
But
right.
yes, it's an interesting piece of
What blows me away, and I know enough from causal analysis to understand perspectives are very different sometimes. I always wondered what it would be like to be a fly on the wall and hear my supervisor getting interviewed over this and what happened, all I know is he apologized to me if he was asked to do that or if he did that out of the goodness of his heart, but he knew he was a bit harsh on me because he was really frustrated at the moment. And I definitely understood his frustration. He wasn't looking to really understand my frustration. And that was from the beginning of the night. All he wanted me to do was get in containment. And all I had were questions. Stop asking questions, get in containment. Stop asking questions, get into containment. That was his mode, and so he started his shift really frustrated with, you got to get somebody out there to run this crew. And then the crew, let's talk about that for a minute.
Yeah, go for it.
Come to find out, it was a crew of, I want to say it was either five or six, and they had sent three out in every 40 minutes or something like that, they would cycle somebody off the crew. They would come out of containment, go on break, and they would bring somebody else in, and they would do that. So they would get constant breaks all night. But you know who didn't get any breaks all night,
Would
right?
that be you then, James?
Yeah, it would be. It was the only time in my entire life, and the radiation physicist asked me, he says, "Didn't you have to go to the bathroom all night?" Because I was in containment for 10 and a half hours
Jeez.
straight. And I mean, I just sweated all. I mean, no breaks, no going. My only breaks was to go over to the telephone. You know what I mean? And call my boss
Wow.
who's yelling.
So your
So,
performance has got to have been going, cognitive performance going down as well.
yeah.
So
Yeah. As the night progressed, and all, already I'm hot because it's probably, this is towards the end of the outage. So we had a chance to have the equipment hatch open and stuff and cool containment down and ventilation. By the way, everywhere is wearing hearing protection underneath all this stuff. So talking to each other is a little harder. Everything is always a little harder because when you actually add clothes, and then you make it hot and then you put hearing protection in and then you get, safety glasses that sometimes are fogging up. And then you're like, well, I know I can't touch my face. So it just, every little thing gets compounded. And here are the safe places to stand because these are the places that, lower dose areas while you're not hooking something up or what, So anyway, you have so many things to pay attention to this super easy job of connecting a cable to where it sits, but
Wow. No, it's
we were
really.
able to succeed by getting the new parts in. And when we got that new bag delivered, I picked it up at the containment entrance. We call it the hatch and the personnel hatch. And I brought them out there, and we just continued the job and finished it. That was the way that we were able to be successful with that. But I will tell you, it was a lot of stress, unneeded stress. It could have been handled on a front end with a 15-minute pre-job brief, but it wasn't. I gotta tell you, I mean, as I'm looking through, the work order says to replace the O-rings in this procedure, and the procedure is vast. So there was just a section of the procedure to sign off where they're connected, and so that's what we were following. There's another part of the procedure that says sign off where these Litton beam connector O-rings were replaced. I was not briefed on that, and this was my first time doing it. And I'm not going to be full of excuses here,
no,
but I'm going to say I literally didn't have the time to go through all of the paperwork in this before we had to start the job. I had this huge trust factor on the guys doing it. Now, by the way, they're trusting me to run the paperwork side of things because they're hired to do the physical side of things. And so everybody out in the field was, and even the supervisor, we're all trying to do our best to get this quote unquote simple job done. And what could you possibly expect could go wrong? Now, I'm going to tell you, the chance of somebody getting hurt on this job, very minimal. You know what I mean? So like the pre-job brief, we went and we were talking about hazards, this job, except for,
apart from being the reactor you're standing next to, but apart from that.
Right. Yeah. Like there's not a lot of hazards associated with this job. But you don't realize until something starts to go wrong like this, how important this job is to the refuel outage. Like this job has to go right, you know?
Yeah.
The importance creeps
you'd
up.
You said something about speaking up, and it reminded me of a conversation that I'd heard from Nipin Anand talking about bridge resource management or crew resource management on the Concordia. And why was it that the crew didn't speak up to the captain, Scatino, for sort of deviating and overshooting the turn and not resolving the issues? And he turned around and said, it's really hard to ask a question about something you don't know about. So in this case here is, I need you to speak up. Speak up about what? What is it that's missing? And, just thinking of as a simple shortcut or a process that I would use in a spreadsheet to make sure that I'd got totaling correctly is I have rows and columns totals. So, I basically sum a column and then at the end of that row, I'll sum the cells and make sure that they both add up in both ways. And I'm just thinking of, here's something here as a simple way, in hindsight, is you sit there and go, right, I've got this, here we have as the total. And there might be a number on that bag that says 245 O-rings. Cool.
And right. But then I would have also had to add up individually because it doesn't give you a number in the procedure.
No, but what I mean is the procedure should be written to say.
Pages and pages,
It is that basically here is your summary piece. So somebody who doesn't have work stress to deal with has done the difficult maths for you.
Love that.
That basically says, to take away the difficult stuff and all you're doing is doing the cross check. So it's a really cool story. You sit there and go, hey, nuclear industry, how hard can it be? You prestigeize everything, you cross check everything, and all you're doing is just swapping them around. So, thank you for that. The final part of the podcast is the recommendation of a book or a story or a paper that's sort of influenced you or what you think that other people should read or watch that sort of generates some interest. So, over to you. What would you recommend?
It's more of a current one, but it kind of really rocked my world in the world of human performance. I'm always looking for good books and stuff, and I know you are too. But Adam Grant wrote a book called Think Again.
Yep.
It really starts with wild firefighters. And a really cool story. And from there, it just goes off in these really cool directions. I actually recommend the audio book to that. It's just really fantastic.
Credits, so I'll go for that.
I immediately when I was done with it, I listened to it again. I'm like, brilliant. Wow. I'm in airplanes quite a lot, and I do a lot of audio books, and I just absolutely love this one. For entertainment, I'm more of I rarely read fiction, I think my favorite book of all time though is A Walk in the Woods. I don't know if you've heard of that.
No.
I think you would like that.
I will go and look that in the show notes as well. So awesome.
Yeah, A Walk in the Woods by Bill Bryson is his name. He's written a bunch of really cool books. At Home, actually, it's a tie. Walk in the Woods and At Home. Those are my Those are my two favorite books to read, just to when I'm vegging, if you will.
Think about the world.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm always caught with, like, I love this book, Psychological Safety
All
Playbook.
right, yep.
I don't refer to this, but it's really actionable stuff. It's like, well, how could I take Amy Edmondson's stuff and make
Yeah.
it into the work environment? And this is a really great bridge
Cool.
for
I'll add that.
practitioners in leadership. Yeah, Psychological Safety Playbook. It's really good.
Brilliant.
So,
James,
and
thank you very much for your time. Really
of
enjoy this
course.
conversation. I'll let you get back to your coffee and get the
All
day
right.
going. So excellent. Thanks very much, James, and we'll catch you soon.
Sure. All right. Thanks, Garrett.